Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
Good morning. Roy, happy Father's Day.
Roy's choking on a Father's Day donut. What are you pointing at?
Turn your music off.
Turn your sound off.
Bruce is over here just jamming out.
Welcome to Amateur Day on Bruce Hall Sports.
I don't know
it's
what
Father's
you're talking
Day, so.
About.
Same thing, right?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mute your computer.
What's wrong with my computer?
You got to mute it.
How do you mute it? Do you just hit it real hard?
Yes.
I got it. Hold on.
If you throw it against the wall, it'll most likely stop playing music.
I don't know how to do this.
So we have a big show today. We're going to go down some NFL talk. We're going to do some LB talk. We're going to listen to Bruce's computer.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great show.
It can't be bad. By the way, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I'm a father. This Daddy Longlegs is a father. Roy is even a father. Jeez.
Twice over. What? Oh, yeah. I mean, not yet.
Oh, wait a minute. Is there news that we don't know about?
Yeah, I got two dogs.
Oh, there you go. That figures. Welcome to Bruce Hall. Welcome to Bruce. Matt's a father. He's got two children.
Yeah.
Roy has one. I have three.
I do.
So we got them all covered, 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. My mother had 14 kids in her family. Her mom gave birth to 14 kids. 11 of them lived past like age 2. It was kind of hard to keep kids back in the mountains of North Carolina when you had a midwife and, it's too many things could go wrong. And they did often enough. That's why they kept having kids. Plus, they needed kids to do all the chores on their
farm. Yeah, you get a that's free labor.
Yeah, it's free labor, but it's kind of the way they did it back then. Not that we would ever know, because I know every house you've been in. You have lived a very fun, good life. Your parents provided for you very well. Mm-hmm. They were at every sporting event you've ever been involved in.
My parents didn't.
Not when you were in college.
My parents didn't attend a single high school lacrosse game.
Well, that's because they hate lacrosse because your father's a baseball fan.
That's exactly right.
And I'm the same way. Lacrosse is for people that can't hit a curveball.
I can hit a curveball.
Yeah. Well, then why'd you play lacrosse, fool?
Because you
sucked at baseball.
Because the baseball program.
You were a golfer, remember?
I remember. A golfer.
Now, you were a good golfer.
Let's
and you still
just
are.
Pick
it's still
on
a golfer. Is anybody called in?
I played lacrosse because you actually had to be athletic to play lacrosse. And the baseball program at my high school sucked. And so I played 3 years varsity, and I was a captain all 3 years, and we went to regionals 4 years in a row. So that's why I played lacrosse.
Yeah, but it was Falls Church, so it doesn't
really
count.
I'm sure the baseball program there really enjoyed their 3 wins over their 4 years.
Yeah, but they won about, your dad coached their JV or their varsity too. Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Tell your dad to not quit
Happy
his day.
Father's
tell
day,
your
dad, dad you tell
Greg not to quit his day job.
All the athletes.
By the way,
lacrosse
now just listen to me. Frank Worman took over the Falls Church Jaguars this year, and they won like 8 or 9 games.
Baseball?
Yeah,
they're also not playing in the same league anymore.
I know they're not.
They dropped down. Now they play the special schools.
Yeah, they play.
Seriously, they dropped down because
they dropped the Special Olympics, which is not a bad thing.
That's why we went to the playoffs in football for the first time in 33 years.
Does we were everybody
up on like the special
beat up
schools?
Woodbridge Technical Academy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Roy, does everybody get a hug after they score a run?
Everybody gets hugs.
There you go.
Hugs and high fives.
That's good. We got Russ Baxter is going to be calling in. As a matter of fact, we thought he should be calling in any minute. He's probably busy with his nonprofit, which is, to beat cancer. As a matter of fact, I ordered a bunch of T-shirts from Russ, and I'm so happy because now we're gonna give them away probably every week. We'll be doing giveaways with his T-shirts. We're going to have some T-shirts printed up for the show. I just decided we're going to start giving stuff away. Maybe that'll get a few phone calls from some people who need clothing that are listening to our show.
Do you want free?
We're big in the homeless community.
Well, no, we are big in the homeless. Don't talk like that's a bad thing.
All the people who listen to Roy's bets.
Yeah, they're now homeless. Exactly. Stupid.
By the way, Chuck Knoll died, age 82. Oh, that was
bad.
Matt, do me a favor.
We need to time that one a little bit.
That's terrible timing on the box.
Matt, a little less of the involvement a little more on the work in the box. Okay. The Chuck Knoll, who is one of my four Super Bowl rings, Steeler dynasty, Terry Bradshaw. They won one game his first year there, and then they won four Super Bowls in the next 12 years or 11 years. Chuck Knoll was one of the greatest coaches ever. Everybody that ever played for him. Of course, he did play in the era when there was no salary cap.
No free agency.
Yeah, no free agency. There was no salary cap. It was a much more uneven league. And it wasn't nearly as big as it is now. And people didn't make the kind of money even close to what they make now. Mm-hmm. But having said that, Lynn Swann, you look at the Steel Curtain defense with LC Greenwood. We got a call. Russ Baxter. Hey, Russell, you there, buddy?
It is me. How are you?
I'm doing
great. Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. Same to you, Russ. Hey, we're glad you're calling in. We were just starting to talk about Chuck Knoll. Give us your Chuck Knoll info, because I'm sure you know just about everything there is to know about this guy. Okay.
Well, what a remarkable. This was a guy who played for Paul Brown and coached under Don Shula. You know, took over. You know, it's so funny. You hear fans complain about their football teams not being very good for a couple of years, correct?
Right, exactly.
You know, we live in Washington. We know exactly what that's like.
Yeah, we had the same similar problem. Well, look, when Jimmy Johnson went to Dallas, they went 1-15. The only win they had was against the Redskins. I know I was there. But then they won three Super Bowls, and Knoll did the same thing in Pittsburgh, but they won four, right?
Well, but here's the difference between Dallas and Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Steelers from 1933 to 1968 played in one playoff game. One.
Yeah.
They were horrible for almost 40 years.
Yeah, they were. They were.
Okay, they were Orleans Saints. They were the New Orleans Saints, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, before there were New Orleans Saints and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Okay? They were a laughingstock.
Right.
They were more known for giving away good players than having good players. Guys like Johnny Unitas, et cetera, et cetera. So Chuck Knoll comes in. Oh, great guy. Won his very first game in 1969. And then proceed to lose 16 in a row. And in this day and age, I'd probably get you fired.
Yeah.
But that was a different day and age. And for a change, the Steelers and the Rooneys, who had gone through – you know, more head coaches than I go through a bag of potato chips during the week. Drafted well, built, and then of course 1974 drafted Lynn Swann, Jack Lambert, John Stallworth, and Mike Webster in the first five rounds, all in the Hall of Fame. And by the way, I also, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about, well, Chuck Knoll, hey, you know, he had a lot of Hall of Fame players. They weren't Hall of Fame players when he got up.
Right.
He made them Hall of Fame players. Look at the run that the Steelers had from 1972 to 79, eight straight years in the playoffs, six AFC title games, four Super Bowl wins. But here's the thing that was remarkable, a couple things that are remarkable about what the Steelers accomplished over that span alone. In 74 and 75, there was still old-style football. Run the ball, play defense, conservative for the most part. The Steelers won back-to-back Super Bowls in 74 and 75. Then because of defense and guys like Mel Blount, who, you know, very physical cornerback, other cornerbacks like Louis Wright and, you know, other corners around the league. Remember, the league changed the rules in 1978. They opened up the passing game, the five-yard chuck rule, the extension of pass blocking. Players were allowed to extend their arms when pass blocking. They wanted to open up the passing game. So how was the team like the Pittsburgh Steelers, Frank Clark, Rocky Glyer, and you know, the Steel Curtain and conservative football for the moment, how are they going to fare in that type of era? Well, all they did was win the first two Super Bowls. They changed the rules.
Right.
So four Super Bowls, 6 years, two different styles. But here's the thing. Here are the two things that stick out the most to me about Chuck. Oh, maybe three. One, he never really wanted the attention. He wanted it to go to the players. Okay. Two, maybe his best coaching job ever was in 1989, far removed from the Steel Curtain days and the Dynasty days and so on. The Pittsburgh Steelers in 1989 lost their first two games to the Cleveland Browns and Cincinnati Bengals by a combined score of 92-10.
I remember that. I remember
they
that.
They made the playoffs that year at 9-7, went into Houston and beat the Oilers in overtime, and then got beat by the Broncos a week later at Mile High. That might have been Noel's best coaching job. They lost to the Browns at home 51-0, and then lost to the Bengals 41-10, regrouped, and wound up making the playoffs. A remarkable accomplishment by Chuck Noll. And I think the best thing I ever heard said about Chuck Noll was in an old SI article, and I believe it was Jack Ham who said this about him, and I think this encompasses the person that Chuck Noll was. He wasn't the kind of guy you'd go out and have a beer with, but if I died, I'd want him to raise my kids.
It doesn't get any better than that. And that there's a lot of head coaches in the day that a lot of players would have said that about. Can you hold on while we do a quick break, can't you?
Oh, of course. You got me today, Bruce.
No, thanks, Russ. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be back in a minute with Russ Baxter, the pro football guru, and more of Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or on Twitter, hashtag BHSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back here on this Father's Day weekend. Father's Day show, talking some NFL, some Chuck Noll with none other than Mr. Russ Baxter, the football guru. Who better to have on than he? And we're talking a little bit of Steelers dynasty. And I believe you were just getting into the 89 season about Chuck Noll's best performance in your eyes.
Yeah, the Steelers that year, coming off a dreadful year in 1988, lost their first two games in 1989, 51-0 and 41-10 to the Browns and the Bengals, respectively. They lost that first game at home, Old Three Rivers Stadium, 51-0 to the Cleveland Browns. Can you imagine the ire of the Steeler fans on that one? But by the end of the year, they were 9-7, won a wild card berth, beat the Oilers in the wild card playoffs at the Astrodome. And, it was Bubby Brister at quarterback and exciting receiver. Louis Lips was a big part of that team. Greg Lloyd was a young player on that team in 89. Just a lot of different components that made that, probably a special year for him. And you could probably almost tell that Chuck Noll probably enjoyed that as much as anything, because it really was a lot of young players that he got a chance to teach. And I think that was the aspect of football that he probably enjoyed the most. I got a chance to meet Chuck Noll at the Super Bowl a number of years ago up in Minnesota, Super Bowl 26, and got into more of a personal conversation. He was more interested in, where I was from and so on than anything else about talking about football. And, again, when you think of the Steelers and you think of how they are now, all those coaches they went through, and Chuck Noll – ushered in the era of three coaches since 1969. Yeah. He was followed by Bill Cowher and now Mike Tomlin. You think about the Cleveland Browns, who have had three head coaches in 3 years. So think about that. And, but again, it was such a reversal of fortune, Bruce and Roy, mm-hmm. from a franchise that, was continuously changing up. It just shows you how important continuity is in football. And obviously, it's funny to read around the articles on Twitter just around the country yesterday. I don't know about you guys. I don't remember seeing anybody say anything negative about Chuck Noll. I think that speaks a lot for what he did and who he was and so on. And again, how's this for a start? I guess you knew things were going to start changing around when your first ever draft choice is Mean Joe Green.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes me back a little ways. When my son was, I don't even know how old he was, but it was several years ago when they played before they built Heinz Field, when they were in the process of building Heinz Field in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. Their last game at Three Rivers was against the Washington Redskins. And, I was in the ticket business for 30 years. And I actually went to that game, and it was 34, 35 degrees. Wasn't snowing. It was raining. It was the coldest day I've ever been in a game. And we stayed at the Doubletree Hotel. And guess who else stayed there? It was a Steelers reunion. And everybody was there. And the thing that was the most amazing thing to me about that whole thing, because we were at the reception with all these guys that I don't know how we got in. I think I might have bought a ticket. Anything is buyable in the ticket business. But I got into that, and I'm going to tell you, Chuck Knoll had them all around him. I mean, every guy. And I'll tell you, remember, Mel Blunt is huge. He was a cornerback, and Jack Lambert looked like his son. Jack Lambert was a middle linebacker with no teeth that played at about, what, 205, 210? And he might have weighed less than that.
I have a leg that weighs more than Jack Lambert.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, Mel Blunt looked to me like a middle linebacker. He was the biggest guy there.
Bruce, not to interrupt you, but I go out to Canton, as you know, every year for the induction ceremonies.
Right.
And, you know, Mel Blunt's out there every year. And I keep waiting for someone to sign Mel Blunt. Okay?
Yeah.
If you would see him now, you were like, wow. Wow. The guy was drafted in 1970. Think about that. He's still – I know you hear that every once in a while. He still looks like he could play. He still looks like he could play. That's not an exaggeration and so on. And he was huge. And he was one of the reasons the league changed the rules. I mean, him and other guys, it wasn't just him. But he's such a physical corner, you know. Now I will say this. It's funny. Guys like Cliff Branch didn't mind playing against Mel Blunt because Cliff Branch often ran by him.
Right.
Okay, the speed guys, but you had, but you also had to get by Mel Blunt, and he along with those other Steelers wound up having to change their games and adapting their games and so on, and that's why I find the Steelers of the 70s so remarkable, because if you remember the 78 and 79 team,
right,
you know, Franco was still a 1,000-yard runner, but he was a different 1,000-yard runner, and they were a team that didn't rely on the front four. They did a lot of blitzing. Lambert and Ham and different things, and they found different ways to adapt to the more what was now an evolving game. And then, of course, you saw Bradshaw throw the Swan and Stallworth and it was a special era. You see those teams that, there's a reason they're the only franchise to win back-to-back Super Bowls twice.
Yeah, they were definitely, everybody wanted, you know, everybody wore Steelers stuff, even if they weren't from Pittsburgh. This was about...
Wait, do you remember the, I'm trying to remember what count, was it Goodyear or Firestone that came out with the Steeler tire?
Right. It was Firestone, I'm pretty sure. The thing that was, to me, so amazing about the Steelers is they really brought... I mean, defense was already very important. Let's just go. I mean, even the Packers dynasties, the defense was the key. But but they, in a time when everybody was trying to get more offensive and the league was trying to score more points, right, the Steelers basically just shut the door on that. Because what they did was they figured out ways that they could, you know, keep the offenses to a bare minimum. And they also ran the football and kept the football, too, and gave their defense a break. I remember when they drafted or signed Rocky Blyer? I want to say he was a draft choice. I think, and he went to
Vietnam. Yes, he was. Like in the 16th or 17th round.
He went to Vietnam, right, for like 3 years, and then he came back, I think, after serving 3 or 4 years in Vietnam. And next, well, maybe it was in Vietnam, maybe, because it might have been just after that.
No, Bruce, you're correct. It was Vietnam, and if you remember, he was horribly injured, his foot and so on. Rocky Blyer is a big hero to a lot of people. He was a marginal player. He's at Notre Dame, if I remember right. Came back injured. The Steelers stuck with him, and he became Franco Harris's lead blocking back. On all four of those Super Bowl teams. People forget in 1976, both Franco and Rocky both ran for 1,000 yards. At the time, they were the second team to do that, the Dolphins of 72. But, no, I mean, the thing about the Steelers is they not only had great players, they had such great characters. You know, we just recently, you know, in the last, you know, few months, Elsie Greenwood passed away.
Right.
And you remember the thing about Elsie, besides the fact that he was 6'6 and had those long arms and batted down passes.
Right.
You know, the golden shoes of Elsie Greenwood. How could anybody, you know, Steeler fans love that? And for people who don't know the story, you know, back in the day, football players had to get their shoes painted. Everybody got their shoes painted paint. You know, somebody said, "Elsie, you got to get your shoes painted. What color do you want them?" Almost sarcastic, he said, "Just paint them yellow."
That's great. You know,
well, but here's the best part. Now, you know, this might be, you know, folklore or whatever, but from what I understood, he wore those shoes every week, and he was fined every week for wearing those shoes. Okay,
yeah.
But find a picture of Elsie Greenwood out there without his yellow shoes.
Would never have happened in a million years. Listen, let me ask you a question. And you may have already noticed this, but Vince Young declared that he's officially retiring. I didn't know that he hadn't already retired. I think he was like a third string QB somewhere. And they drafted somebody, I think, and they just decided to let him go. Did you know anything about that?
Well, yeah, now Vince Young, you know, he's kind of tried to bounce around the league, you know, signing with the, I think he had tried the Packers. This offseason, he signed with the Browns for a couple of months, and then they let him go. I think he's tried to revive his career. It hasn't worked. You know, almost a strange career. You know, certainly had his moments where he helped get the Titans to the playoffs, kind of. You know, he didn't in 07. In 08, it was really Kerry Collins who did that. He looked like he had revived his career for a little while, and then it all kind of came apart, you know, the falling out, literally, with Jeff Fisher. His stint in Philadelphia for a little bit. He was kind of the guy who coined the dream team phrase, I should say. But this guy was the third pick in the 2006 draft, and yeah, I hope for his sake more people – and listen, he had his moments in the pros, and he also had some very disappointing moments. But I think, for me at least, I think of Vince Young in that amazing night he had against USC in the Rose Bowl. And, you know, that's probably his biggest claim to fame more than anything else. More of an enigma than anything else, I think Vince Young goes down. And you think about that draft that we were all excited about in 2006. What, Vince Young was third?
Yeah.
Matt Leinart was 10th, and Jay Cutler was 11th. None of them are with the teams that originally drafted them. Mm-hmm. Two of them are basically now out of the league, and Jay Cutler at least is, you know, alive and well and doing okay in Chicago. And you know, although some people are still have mixed emotions about him as well.
Yeah. Now that's definitely true. All right, let's go real quickly while we got it. We got a couple of minutes left. Let's go quickly to the New York Giants. They not only have one defensive back that gets in drug problems, but they have a second, then they look like they're going to lose substantial time. Then John Beeson goes down, and he may be out for quite a while. What is going on with the New York Giants? How bad can their luck go, or is this luck? Is this just the fact that maybe they're in a situation they shouldn't be in?
Well, I mean, you can never tell with these things. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens, you know, it's pretty as sound an organization, as you know, Bruce, as anyone in the league, and they've had their off-the-field issues this year as well. I mean, it's mystifying in this day and age where the scrutiny is – you know, it's funny, the scrutiny is heavier, and in some ways that's good, in some ways that's bad, but the eyes are everywhere, okay, especially if you are in the public eye. And, you know, some of the things that go on now, you're almost like, you know, really? You know, maybe that's going to become the new catchphrase. Really? My friend Tom Jackson used to say that all the time.
No,
really? There's a lot of really things.
My wife, that's one of my wife's favorite sayings, too.
Yeah, no, it works. And it's sometimes mystifying. But, you know, here's what I'll say about the New York Giants, which has just been different for them the last couple of years. And you guys know this as well as anyone. They've never been a team that has delved into free agency a lot.
Nope.
They're kind of like the Packers and the Steelers and, you know, some other teams that have, you know, always done a good job drafting. I mean, Jerry Reese has done good job drafting and also finding undrafted free agents. And the last 2 years, they've spent their share of money bringing in. And it's almost kind of a departure of philosophy on their part. And, you know, sometimes, for whatever reason, that just doesn't work. I understand trying to shake up the apple cart and all that. And, you know, how many defensive backs did the Giants actually sign this year? You think about all the guys they brought in, Walter Thurman and Dominique Rogers-Cromartie and, you know, a couple of safeties and so on. I think when you get away from the thing that has gotten you success, and, you know, here's what I think people also forget about the Giants, because I think there is a misnomer. Again, as good a job as they've done, they haven't been as successful on the field as everybody thinks. I'm trying to come up with a good analogy for this, okay? But I won't bother. I'll just give you the fact. We forget that the Giants have missed the playoffs for the last 5 years.
Correct.
But they have a Super Bowl. They get 1 year, they won it.
Yeah, 2 years, really, during a three-year period. Yep.
I mean, they've missed the playoffs for the last 5 years, and yet the 1 year they made it, they won the whole thing. It's kind of, you know, maybe it's an NFC East thing. People, as you guys are well aware of, the Redskins have missed the playoffs 5 of the last 6 years and finished last every one of those years.
Yeah, they're real.
But they won a division in 2012.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So if you want to talk about a hit or miss, it's hit or miss. I mean, think about it. The last two teams in the NFC East to finish last won the division the following year. And then, of course, you do have the constant, the Dallas Cowboys, who are remember that show, 8 is Enough?
Yeah, exactly.
New sitcom coming out called 8 and 8 is Enough.
Yeah, 8 and 8 is all they want, it seems. I mean, everybody seems to be happy. Hey, Russ, we're going to have to leave. Can you tell people where they can tell everybody real quickly about your charity that you're doing for cancer?
Thank you very much, Bruce. And by the way, Bruce, thank you very much for people out there who enjoy Bruce's work, as I do, and so on. Mr. Hall was kind enough to buy a dozen shirts, our ProFootballGuru.com shirts, and making a sizable contribution to the American Cancer Society. You can go on my website, but here's the easiest way. Just email me, russell@profootballguru.com, russell@profootballguru.com. We'll give you the details on how to get a shirt, and 20% of the cost of the shirt, which is $15, goes to the American Cancer Society. A good friend of mine, Andrew Fish Fane, is matching our contributions for the month.
Wow.
Of June. So far, Pro Football Guru has raised $235. You can do the math, times that times two. So we're on our way to giving the American Cancer Society a nice check, and a lot of that is on your behalf, Bruce, so it's very appreciated. But drop me an email. You can go on the website, look under the merchandise tag. You can pay by check or PayPal. It's something I feel really strongly about. I lost my mom to cancer back in 1998. Which is actually a blessing, because she was born in heaven and she's just back to where she belongs.
There you go. Russell Baxter, everybody. He is Pro Football. Russ, thank you very much.
Thanks, Russ.
We'll be back in a minute on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to BruceHallSports.com or by going to Facebook.com/BruceHallSports. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
It is Father's Day, which
absolutely
is always a great weekend.
You know what?
We had crabs. I had crabs yesterday. My dad had crabs yesterday. We were in different places.
It's been years since I've had crabs. And all you need to do is just go to the CVS and you can get stuff that'll get rid of that.
I've never had that crabs, Bruce. So.
Hey, listen, I've got. Well, you just
we must.
That
hang
doesn't
out in
surprise
places.
Me. That doesn't surprise me. Hey, listen. Yeah, you're just such a good kid. I want to tell my dad's story again, real quick, because my father, Lonnie Denton Hall, died at a young age of 46. I'm 60, and I can't imagine even passing away. That's me knocking on wood. The dogs will probably start barking. But here's the deal. We used to go out and play catch all the time. I was 10 when he passed away. I did more fishing and woodworking and helping around the house before I was 10 than I have since. And I'm not proud of that. But a lot of it's because my dad passed away at such an early age, and it was just me and my mom after that. There's a lot of kids out there that just have one parent and they've lost a parent. And you know, there's a difference between losing a parent to divorce and losing a parent to death, because the ones that are divorced, you almost end up with another family sometimes, and it's really not such a bad deal for the kid. But when you lose a parent to death, it's really, you know, it's a permanent situation, and it's really, it's not fun. But, you know, you make it, you survive, and you go on. But what happens is things become a lot more important to you than a lot of other people, like when you have your own family. And so I can't remember who it was. I want to say it was Chuck Todd sent out a text. He sent out a tweet today. I actually asked Todd to come on and Chuck to come on and predict who was going to win the World Cup today. He may call in. But Chuck Todd, of course, of, you know, NBC, and, you know, it's hard for me to like him too much because his wife's one of the biggest Democratic lobbyists in the world. But I like Chuck a lot. But anyway, my dad used to go out with me when I first started playing baseball, and we'd play catch. And I was an average kid. You know, I wasn't big when I was 10. I grew about a foot and 2 inches in 2 years after he died, and I was like 5'9 when I was 12. And I looked 14 years old, and I was actually driving a car because my mom would let me. See, my mom liked to drink, so I drove her around while she drank. And for those of you who think that's terrible, it really wasn't so terrible. I learned how to drive at a very early age, and I'm still a good driver. I scare the crap out of people, my wife, in the car, because I do things that, well, basically Mario Andretti does in a car. But I've managed not to get a ticket or two every year for the past several years, and I don't even have any radar device. So anyway, go back to my dad. We play catch. Roy's laughing because I'm getting off on tangents. But my parents are responsible for this. But we would play catch, and every 10 minutes, he had really bad arterial sclerosis. He couldn't stand up for more than 10 minutes. He had a massive coronary heart attack when he was 34 years old, and before I was even born. And, you know, he was constantly, you know, they didn't have the medication they have today. They didn't know what caused heart attacks and bad arteries and all that. They had an idea, but they didn't know. And about every 10 minutes, he'd have to sit down for 5 minutes or so. Then he'd get back up and play catch with me. And I would say, Dad, don't worry about it. You don't need to play catch. He said, No. You need to do this. You need to learn how to play baseball. Well, guess what? I'm 60 and I'm still playing baseball. I'm still coaching baseball. I still love baseball. I love sports. Because it's one of the most positive things that we have going on in this country at the amateur level. Professionally, not so great, because these guys make tons of money and there's a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of crazy money involved, but I still like the big leagues. You know, I still have friends in the big leagues that coach and manage and scout and all of that good stuff. But for all of you dads out there that went out of your way to help your kids do what they want to do and be better at everything that's important, my hat goes off to all of you. I love all of you. Oh, we got a call calling in. I wonder who this is. Hello?
Hey, Dad. It's Davis. I just want to wish you a happy Father's Day.
Well, Davis, I can't thank you enough. This is my son, Davis Hall. He's my pitching coach on my Vienna River Dogs baseball team. Hey, so you got in at a pretty good hour last night, it sounds like, because you're already up.
Yeah. That's early morning.
Well, I appreciate it. Listen, make sure you text me about your fantasy. Davis constantly sends me texts about his fantasy team. He'll, like, say, you know, so-and-so or so-and-so, and I'll, you know, he... It wasn't until he got to about the age of 22, 23 when, and this happens to everybody, but all of a sudden your dad's not so stupid, is he?
No.
All right, man. Hey, Davis, I love you. I love you, buddy, and thanks for calling in. I love my daughter, Emily. I love my daughter, Erin. Erin just sent me a text. Emily may still be asleep. She went out on some little girl's 21st birthday party last night, so she's probably still in bed. But thanks, Davis. I appreciate it.
All right, love you. I'll see you at Silver Spring.
Yeah, I'll be there. See you later, buddy. we got a game later on in Silver Spring. We play the Thunderbolts. But anyway, I just, you know, it's hard not to, there's nothing more important than family, you know, and you know, fathers are important. And for those of you that, and look, being a mom's tough, and being a mom is super tough because, well, you know, moms have the babies. But it's important to a family. Matt, wouldn't you say that the dad hangs around and spends a lot of time with all the children? And, you know, I can remember going to Girl Scout dances with my daughter, Emily.
That's cute.
Oh, man. I mean, she never let me get off the dance floor for 4 hours. I was like ring wet when I was done. She wouldn't go sit down. But I loved it. I got pictures of it.
I lucked out because I got my daughter into soccer early, so now all I had to do was be the soccer coach for her.
Well, yeah, but you know what? That's very important. I coached soccer until Davis quit playing soccer. Emily plays softball. I even coached one of her softball teams 1 year. But, you know, families, you know, fathers, you know, I miss my dad. When I go to Arlington Cemetery, I see my mom and my dad. You know, I try to get over there every other month. Sometime during the summers, it's absolutely drop dead beautiful all year. Mm-hmm. And when I've got kids in town, I take them, you know, they're playing baseball for me, Roy. I take them to Arlington Cemetery and I give them a tour.
Yeah, it's a great spot.
And it really is. And Rick Snyder owns a tour agency. So you can always hook up with Ricky Snyder, who's a sports guy.
I didn't know that.
And yeah, he runs a tour company, in DC. We're going to have, I'm just looking, we're at the 45 now. We're going to be back after this break, and at the top of the hour, Steve Buckhantz is going to call in. We're going to talk about what everybody in the world's talking about, how bad the Miami Heat has looked the last two games. For the first time in generations, though, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to protect you and to protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back in a minute with more on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Welcome back to Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. You can stay up to date all week by going to brucehallsports.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I was listening to the radio coming in here.
I wanted Roy to tell his story about his dad and the age that Roy decided his dad wasn't so bad. He said 18.
I was 18.
And we're not going to say anything else because you got pretty graphic about some of the stuff. And it was really good.
Well,
your dad would appreciate that.
Every kid,
I can't believe he used knives on you.
Did he really tie you up?
No, I never did it. No, okay. Like, okay. But when you're a little kid and you're growing up, there reaches an age where your dad isn't like your friend anymore and he becomes like your dad. He's hard on you.
He's your warden. He's the warden.
Exactly. He's like and he has to be hard on you, and he has to, you know, teach you those life lessons that, you know, you don't get anywhere else. Your mom doesn't, you know, teach those kind of
lessons. Now, your mom cleans up after you and everything. Yeah,
your mom gives you a different type of life lesson. She gives you your dad's not really that mean. You know, that's those life lessons. So, no, I was it was probably like 7 or 8 years old is when I started being like, man, my dad is like... dick. Man, he is beating me, man. This is rough. And then I was 18. I was 18. Because in the break, you said, my son doesn't hate me anymore. That's pretty cool. It took him a while or something like that. And Bruce was like, when did you stop realizing that, you know, your dad wasn't out to get you or whatever? And I was like, 18. It was literally my 18th birthday. I remember it. I was sitting on the back porch of my dad's house, and he was like, happy birthday. And I was like, yeah, thanks. And he was like, here's a cigar. I was like, what? Like, why are you giving me a cigar? Like, you've hated me. Because I smoked cigarettes when I was 18.
But you didn't need to do that.
It was a cool thing, you know? Oh, cool cigarettes. They had the Camel everywhere. You know, you get the cool Camel points. You could buy, like, a pool table. So, you know, that was really cool. So, no, I smoked cigarettes for, like,
now,
6 years.
Now, tell everybody
you've
quit smoking, though.
I have quit smoking, yeah. Okay. I quit smoking... I don't know. I was in college.
Horrible habit, by the way.
No, I quit smoking. I smoked for college. We'll say that, you know? I smoked for college. But yeah, he handed me a cigar and he was
Everybody does that in college. It's either the gay experience or smoking cigarettes. So you picked the right one.
Yeah, I did. I picked the right one.
Now, wait a minute. Not like there's anything wrong with that.
So my dad was a... he handed me a cigar and I had a beer and I was like, man, this is not how the last 4 years of high school have gone, you know? I was getting chased around my entire life through high school, getting, punished, I guess you could say, even when I didn't get caught.
Your dad, when he was in his teens, got away with everything.
Oh, I know all the stories.
He got away with everything because I was one of his best friends.
Well, I didn't learn the stories.
We used to just love to hang out at his house because his mom and dad basically just kind of put him in the basement, and they didn't care what we did.
Well, that's another thing. When you're growing up, you think your dad is like this, I don't know, he is this authority figure, and he never had any fun. So then when you get turned like 18, 19, or
you meet
for me,
his friends.
For me, it was 21. When I turned 21, it was like all of my dad's friends decided that they wanted to tell every story of when my dad got arrested. And it was just like,
I don't even remember him ever getting arrested. I mean, he had the best luck of any guy I've ever met.
The one story that I've heard, and I can't remember who the first person to tell it to me, because multiple people have told me the story. And they found out a couple.
This is great radio, by the way.
The first, it was my dad was, I don't know, 17, 18, 19, around, you know, teenage years. And he hopped the fence of the White House.
Oh, jeez.
On a dare. I don't know if this is
true. He wasn't probably drunk or anything either.
I don't know
if
this is true or not.
He probably had no idea where he was.
But he hopped the fence of the White House and started running around the lawn, and he got a bunch of AKs pulled on him. And the reason why work found out about this, or some of his best friends found out about this or whatever, was they, for his birthday, it was like his 40th birthday or something like that.
They took him on a White House tour?
They tried to get him a box at an Orioles game. And the president was at the time, whoever it was, I don't remember who it was in the box next to him. And when they ran, you know, they ran a security check of all the people who were in the boxes around, and my dad's name came up, and they were like, you can't be in this box next to the president because you have a prior history of hopping the White House wall. So I don't know if that's a true story, but that is the story that like six of my dad's closest friends have all told me.
Oh, let me tell you, but if he was a Democrat and he ran for office, that would be expunged. Nobody'd ever find that
that's
out.
Right.
It's kind of very similar to being born in another country.
Yeah. So that's just the beginning of the story.
Hey, Matt, get over it.
I've heard.
I also want to wish somebody a happy Father's Day. Mm-hmm. And Matt's gonna freak when I say this, I'd like to Webb Hubble, happy Father's Day, Webb Hubble. And for those of you out there who know who Webb Hubble is, you know who he's the father of. At least that's my story, and I'm sticking
to
it.
Moving on, I will say though, in Greg's dad's or in
Greg's dad,
in
Roy's in my grandfather.
In Roy's dad, the people that run wildest when they're younger, I think, make the better parents because they can see in their children.
They know the lies.
They can see like what starts those crazy nights that they had. So it's like, oh, strawberry ice cream? Don't you dare touch that. Because last time I had strawberry ice cream, I was hopping the fence
at the White House. That's right.
And as a kid, you're just like, That makes no sense, man.
What are you talking about?
It's just strawberry
you're
ice
dick.
Cream.
Well,
I
hate you, Dad.
My son, you know, and my wife is very quick to point it out, but my son, at least, he's 24 now, and he is pretty much, he's quit. At least he tell him, he doesn't drink and drive anymore. He did it one time and got in trouble. And, you know, like me, lost his license for over a year. I lost my license like twice, once for 6 months, once for a year. And probably should have lost it about six or seven times. It wasn't until I quit drinking alcohol when I was 30 years old that I can get in a car and I don't have to look in the trunk to see if there's cops there. Because I used to get in a car.
Did you ever?
I swear to God, you talk about being paranoid. You get two DWIs in 1 year and you try to drive anywhere when you've had one beer. You just feel like you're going to get arrested.
No, I had a wild dad who kept me from doing that because he was like, don't drink that.
Now, wait a minute. You're not unwild, Matt.
I have never driven drunk.
No, but
ever
you,
in my life.
But have you ever driven
I
impaired?
Wish I could say the same.
No, never.
Oh, stop it.
Ever, impaired.
I'm talking about Colorado impaired.
Yes, never have I ever.
Are you
done
just worried your parents are listening to this?
Because my dad.
Put Roy, way, do you buy dad, that? I don't buy that.
I don't know. Maybe he, I don't know what to think
it.
Of that.
I love it. Hey, Batman. By the way, Matt.
Maybe he had somebody who just drove for him. I don't know. Like he always was the guy who never had a car or something.
Are we going to call Mike Tyson and get him to wish us a happy Father's Day?
Do you have the information?
No, we're going to have. We may do that in the second half of the hour. We may call Mike Tyson because evidently for $5, he'll wish your father a happy birthday. And for an extra
$100,
listen to this: for an extra $100, it's not him, but a Mike Tyson impersonator will go to your house and bite your ear off.
Oh, is this Fiverr?
Or eat your kids.
Or eat your kids.
Happy last Father's Day.
Yeah.
Is this Fiverr? Did you find this on Fiverr?
No. It was on Twitter.
No, did I just give Fiverr a free plug?
Oh, you did. Oh, yeah. And I just gave Twitter a free plug. Which, and by the way, go to @BruceHallSports. I need more followers. And see, I don't follow everybody because I gotta follow beat writers. I gotta follow people where I'll get information.
If you're one of my 1,700 followers, you can spare a follow for Bruce over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, give me some followers. I need followers. Hey, we're gonna talk about Major League Baseball, but you know we got Mike Wallace calling in at 11:30, and we got Steve Buckhantz calling in at 11:05. What do we got? How many minutes we got left, Matt?
Like six.
Let's do this. Go to MLB.com. We're going to give everybody. You know what? I've already pulled them out. I've got it right here. Go to MLB.com.
Uh-huh.
Pull up the schedule, Roy, and let's give everybody the games. By the way, I've hit five days in a row, one pick.
You know who's...
There's a guy in the New York Post who picks a game every day.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his name. He's got a losing record this year.
Yeah, I remember
but,
we talked about
him. But I like him. He's a pretty cool guy. I love his little column he does every...
You know who screwed me lately?
Because it's this big. What's that?
You know who screwed me lately?
Who screwed you lately?
Take a guess.
Your wife.
Baseball teams.
Okay.
Who? Baseball teams.
Nats.
The San Francisco Giants.
Well, yeah, because, look, what did I tell you? First of all, they should...
The Rockies?
I don't want to talk
the
about
Rockies,
it.
The Rockies,
No, stop it. I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get mad.
It's hurt me. But I'm mad.
Well, I can't...
That and World Cup is... And California Chrome
Roy,
just wiped me out. Man.
Roy, don't count on Sergio.
Now he's living it with his parents.
Roy, do you want to... Never mind. All right, let's get
first
baseball.
Game.
Now, listen, I'm going to tell you something very interesting. In the American League, there are 8 teams who have a much better record on the road than they do at home. Now, there used to be a time when home field advantage was a home field advantage. Not anymore, evidently. What does that say about Major League Baseball in the American League?
I want to get up in another segment is there was a study that just came out about the biggest bandwagon cities,
right?
Similar to what you're talking about,
right?
About how the fans aren't really, they're not really.
Well, listen, Toronto, Yankee fans, hello. The Yankees are 22-15 on the road. They're 13-16 in Yankee Stadium. So there is no home field advantage. If anything, it is a detriment for the Yankees to play at home. What does that say about the crowd? They just show up and it's like it's a social event. No, they don't cheer anymore.
Well, plus, you got to think of the Derek Jeter
farewell. Have you been to Yankee Stadium? They don't do much anymore.
The Derek Jeter farewell might have something to do with it. Him, you know, being at home and being, you know, you always talk about whenever college players are playing at home and they have big tournaments, they're always trying to run around getting tickets for people and their minds are off.
You know what
Maybe
I think?
Maybe Jeter might be going through giving people tickets.
Well, possibly, but you know what else I think? I just think the Yankees aren't that good. Now, they're 3 games out in first place. Toronto's out in front. Baltimore's 3.5 games back. Boston's 8 games back. I don't think this is their year, and Tampa Bay is basically going to start selling off people before the trade deadline, in my opinion. In the Central Division, you got Detroit. Kansas City has made a run. They're 1.5 games back. Detroit has slid. Detroit has a better road record than home record. So does the Minnesota Twins. Has a better road record than home record. Kansas City 1.5 games back. Cleveland 3.5 games back. That's turning into more of a race. There's only 2 teams, in my opinion, in the West that have any chance at all. That's Oakland and L.A., and we all know I picked Oakland to win the American League pennant this year. By the way, Oakland, 17-13 in that piece of crap stadium they play in. They're 23-14 on the road. The Oakland A's love going on the road.
Well, they play in a football stadium.
Exactly. The stadiums they play at in the road are much nicer.
It's a bad football stadium.
You know what it is? Their locker rooms are so much better on the road. They just enjoy being on the road. And you know who else? Seattle's 19-14 on the road, and they're just the opposite at home, 14-19. Texas, 16-19, 17-15. It's unreal.
Seattle, that's because Angela Rippon is dating the pitcher. They're having a good year. When they're at home, Angela Rippon's around. Everyone is distracted.
All right, there's 3 teams in it, in my opinion, in the National League East, and they'll be in it till the end. Atlanta, Washington, and Miami, only 1.5 games separates them. And guess what? They all have better home records than road records, all of them. It's not even close. In the Central Division, well, the Mets are the Mets. We're going to talk about the Mets when Wally calls in because he's a National League East expert. And we're going to talk about, is Sandy Alderson, what's he need to do with the Mets? Are they going to make a run? Are they just going to give up this year? They're 30-38. He talked about 90 wins, right?
Yeah.
At the start of the season. Yeah. Hello, if you're going to get 90 wins, you better make some moves.
Yeah, do a little better than that.
Milwaukee, St. Louis are the only two teams, in my opinion. A lot of people will argue Pittsburgh and Cincinnati still have a chance. I disagree. I think Milwaukee is the team destined to win the Central, although St. Louis will make it as a wild card, and I think they'll get by in the playoffs because, hey, when they start hitting and when they start pitching, they're going to start winning.
St. Louis, though, there is a serious race going on for the wild card right now. I mean,
it's early.
Early, but Atlanta and Washington, you have to think that one of those teams is at least going to be a wild card. Okay, so then you're fighting for one real spot. And that is the Cardinals. I mean, no, it's still early, the Cardinals, but you got to think the Dodgers are going to be in it, too.
Well, the Dodgers better start winning some games. What was it? Remember the statement I made several times this year already? Mattingly's going to lose his job before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. I still predict he will because I still predict they will start losing. They're talking about trading Kemp anyway. They have one too many guys. They're talking about trading Matt Kemp. I don't think they'll do it, and I'll tell you why. I don't think there's really a spot for Matt Kemp right now. I think he's troubled to begin with, and I think he's always injured. Why do I want him and have to pay him a ton of money? Now, I say that, and yet, you know, the New York Yankees might be able to use Matt Kemp because Carlos Beltran hasn't done anything. He's hitting like 130, and they're paying him $15 million a year.
I'm sure there'd be buyers for Matt Kemp. But
yeah, I
don't know if it's the price that the Dodgers want.
That's exactly right. Colorado's not going to be there. San Diego sucks, and Arizona is just, you know, they're talking about firing Kevin Towers and Kirk Gibson. I mean, that's the talk in Arizona if they don't get it together. I think the problem is their general manager. For sure. I think it's – what? All right, we'll be back in a minute with News Talk 1230 WFAS.
Here you go, Matt.
This is Bruce Hall's Second Opinion.
You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
Brought to you by the National Association of Realtors.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep right center. It is high. It is far. It is gone.
Bruce Hall gives you all the latest sports news from a handicapper's perspective.
What the hell's going on out here?
Join the conversation by calling in at 240-317-7294. Now, here's your host.
They are who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Bruce Hall and Roy G.
A happy Father's Day again to all of you listening out there, except for Matt. Matt, you can go to hell in a handbasket. But
sorry, we're talking real sports on the Skype. And
we're talking. We got some World Cup.
Yeah.
Is that why we were up against a heartbreak? Their producers over there talking about a sport that's stupid. Stupid sports. Speaking of the World Cup, real quick, because it's the only thing I want to get into because we have a guy coming in. He's going to talk about the NBA.
Now, so you can't talk.
The World Cup.
You got it, Matt.
The World Cup opens up with a riot, tear gas, and flopping.
We don't.
That's your World Cup.
We don't care about the World Cup now. We're going to be talking NBA. Steve, you there, buddy?
I am here.
We got Steve Buckhance, the voice of the Washington Wizards, on the line, and my favorite NBA guy of all time. And shoot, Steve, we go back to high school almost. We do go back to high school because I knew about you and you knew about me. We just weren't lucky enough to hang out with each other until we got older. But listen, you know, a lot of talk. I mean, it looks like Miami's done. At least they look done to me. Roy's probably got – I mean, maybe they'll go six games. I don't think so, not when they go back to San Diego. Tell me what your feelings are. And then not only are we going to talk about the playoffs, we're going to talk about, you know, maybe the future of the Miami Heat. You know, what do you see happening here?
Well, first of all, I'm stunned at the way they're playing. However, I think I understand it. You know, you can win a championship, and I think the first time you win a championship, whether it's a Super Bowl or an NBA title or whatever the sport happens to be, you're obviously very, very hungry and very passionate. And then the drive to repeat is huge, and we saw that last year with Miami, although they could have easily lost the game. I think that in certain situations, and now I've never been in this situation, but observing some of these athletes as I have, and observing this Miami team in particular, saying that you're jacked up and passionate and focused to three-peat is one thing, but really being in that mindset is another. And as I watch this team, it doesn't appear to me that LeBron James in particular, and maybe even D-Wade as I watch this thing a little further, it doesn't appear to me that they are all that stimulated by the prospects of three-peating as you would think they would be, or at least as they purport to be, as they say they are. I hear these guys say, yeah, you know, this is a big game and this is a big series. To me, LeBron has already done what he has said he was going to do, which was to take his talents to South Beach and win a championship. Now, yeah, they said they're going to win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, whatever, and they might still. But you have to have that same passion every single year, and I think that he's accomplished what he set out to do. The three of them have. Mm-hmm. They went there together. They manufactured a team, and they went there together, and they won two championships. And if they win a third, okay, but I just don't think they're as passionate as they should be if they legitimately are talking about a three-peat. Meantime, San Antonio is not only focused, passionate, more aggressive, much more hustle to the basketball, mm-hmm. but they're a better team, and they're one of the better teams I've ever seen. The way they move the ball, the way they do what Popovich sets them up to do, the way they use the talent that they have. I'm not as stunned with Miami as I thought I would be. I thought they'd be passionate about it. I just don't think they are.
Yeah, we're talking to four-time Emmy Award winner Steve Buckhantz, the voice of the Washington Nationals. Buck, thanks for coming on. Wizards, I'm sorry. What did I say? Nationals?
Up in the baseball season.
You know what?
We had a nice run.
And I'm sorry. Voice of the Washington Wizards. You know, I still want to call them the Bullets anyway.
I only call them the Bullets.
A lot of people do.
And we pray one day they'll become the Bullets again. I mean, at least I do.
Bring me back my Bullets. That's campaign.
I like the red, white, and blue, though. They did bring that back this
year.
Yeah,
they brought that back. I mean, there's always a chance that could happen, but look, we're used to it at this point. And when we first started, when I first started 17 years ago, they were the Bullets, and then they became the Wizards, in fact, that season. And, you know, when they moved from Capital Center to what then became MCI Center and then Verizon Center, and we would slip on the air all the time, me and Phil Chenier, all the time, and say Bullets. And every once in a while, we still do. But that's okay, I think, because Ted Leonsis, the owner, has made such a concerted effort to bring back and reconnect with the alumni of the team that drew so many fans together, the championship team in 78. Ah. And so you're always seeing Bobby Dandridge, who's actually the president of that little alumni association. You see him at games. You see Kevin Grevy at games. You see George Murison and all these guys at games.
Georgie.
And then when we go on the road, you know, we'll bring on guys, whether it's Stan Love or Elvin Hayes or Bernard King, whoever it happens to be. So when we slip up and call them Bullets every once in a while, I think people get it at this point.
You know, getting back, Roy had a question. Yeah, Let me just go real quick here. The thing that I noticed the most in the game the other night was just how it looked like the varsity against the JV from a defensive standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, the Spurs, and I picked the Spurs a long time ago to win, and that's just, it's not lucky. I mean, but, you know, they, even early on, I figured they had a 50% chance to win it all just because of their coaching and their ability with Tim Duncan and all of the tools that he's got around him. And these kids that are playing for them are just getting better, aren't they?
They really are. I mean, Kawhi Leonard, what, he's in his third year? How good is that guy?
He's unbelievable.
He's crazy. And Danny Green's having some great moments, a couple of defensive laps here and there. You know, I picked Miami to win it again. And even before the series, I picked them to win it in six. I believed that they would go back to Miami and win two, mm-hmm. go to San Antonio and lose, and come back and win in six games in Miami. Well, I mean, I'm dead wrong, and that's why I'm surprised, because I saw that team play during the season, and even though they lost Mike Miller, they're virtually the same team, and they clearly have gotten much more from Rashard Lewis than anybody thought they would get. When they played with that smothering defensive aggressiveness, and you saw it actually early on in the San Antonio series when they started forcing all these Spurs turnovers, you were seeing what the Miami defense was all about. You were seeing why they won the title last year and the year before, save for obviously the X factor, which is James. But you're not. San Antonio's figured it out now, and you're right. The way they, what I've noticed, Bruce, is that not only all the things you just mentioned about playing around Duncan and doing what Popovich said, who's obviously a pretty brilliant coach, but they're just out-hustling Miami. I mean, you look at all these, they call them 50-50 balls. I don't even know if I'd call them that. I'm just talking about jarring balls loose defensively, keeping a hand on a ball to save it in play. I mean, we've seen Leonard and Green do that time after time after time, and Miami just hasn't been able to recover. And then you factor in Parker and Ginobili and all these guys who really are skilled players. They're a beautiful thing to watch right now.
Well, you know, the amazing thing, too, was the other night, if you look at the numbers that Duncan had and Ginobili had, you wouldn't think they maybe even won the game, but it was all the other guys playing together with obviously what Tim brings to the table when he doesn't score. I mean, Tim...
Yeah, and that's their whole philosophy. There's really no wasted talent on the team. There's no wasted energy. If some guy's not playing well, the second he comes in the game, Popovich takes him right out, and they fix it, and then he comes back. I mean, they've been that way forever. If you're on that team and you're in the rotation, which are a lot of guys generally, then you're expected to do what you do. They don't sign guys with the intent of just bringing them along or letting them sit on the bench or not being productive. Their economy in movement, I mean, that's what that team does. That's what they're all about. And whether it's Splitter or whoever comes into the game.
What Bonner, a great name, by the way, Splitter.
Yeah, I mean, they're just... They're all productive. They all do what they have to do at certain times. And you're right, it doesn't have to be Duncan scoring 26 points or Parker scoring 28 or Ginobili. They're doing it by committee now.
Hey, Steve, can you stay on? We're going to take a break here just real quickly. And then
sure.
Can you stay on for another segment? Because we want to talk about the future of the Miami Heat, too. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. I'm Bruce Hall. We'll be back with Steve Buckhantz in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
And we're back talking some NBA hoops and some NBA finals. Now, Steve, as we jump further into this finals, you know, it's all the talk has been about the Spurs, is about the big three, you know, the Ginobili, the Parker, the Duncan. But really, when you look at these stat boards, it's Leonard and Diaw and the younger supporting cast. You talked about Danny Green. Everyone thought that the Spurs were deeper, everyone knew that the Spurs were deeper than the Heat, but how much of this is really on the supporting cast of each team's big three rather than the big three stars that both teams are talked about?
I guess if you look at San Antonio, first of all, a lot of it is, and they've clearly been better than Miami's. Miami doesn't. Or at least isn't producing much off the bench. Whereas if you look at, and you mentioned Boris Diaw, man, I thought he was a fossil at first. And I remember him playing with Atlanta, and he just was always an okay player. But he's much better than I thought he was, at least in the playoffs. He's been fabulous. And then as you mentioned, the other guys with Danny Green and Splitter and Bonner and whoever else they happen to bring in off the bench. They've produced where Miami's guys have not, and they've had to mix their lineup around. They've had to, you know, at one point they went to starting Rashard Lewis, and he's given them some things. I didn't think he was really I didn't think he was still able to hit the jumper the way he does, but that's what made him, at one point, when he came to Washington from Orlando, he was the second highest paid player in the league to Kobe Bryant, which he earned when he was with the Magic and he took them to the finals and what have you. But I'm guessing now he's playing for the for the league minimum, which is a little over $1 million a year, but that's he'll still be able to eat. He's got millions of dollars, like the guy that's on the bench coaching him, Juwan Howard. But they're not very productive. So I think, you know, collectively and guys off the bench, pretty clearly we've seen San Antonio dominate here.
Do you think that Spoelstra is being outcoached by Popovich? I know that Popovich is the better coach. He's a Hall of Fame coacher, arguably, at the end of his career. He's going to go down as one of the best coaches that ever coached. But Eric Spoelstra, to me, kind of seems like he's trying to coach like Popovich at times, where you see Haslam's playing 10 minutes a game, you know, Cole is playing close near 20 minutes a game. It seems like he's trying to reach for guys that throughout this postseason and throughout the season just haven't been there for them. Do you think that Spoelstra is getting outcoached by Popovich?
I think most coaches would get outcoached by Greg Popovich, and I don't just throw that out there. And that's not to say there aren't some really terrific coaches in the league. I think we've got one right here in Washington. I think Randy Whitman is a terrific coach. You have to have the players to execute what you do, what your strategy is, and obviously Miami has the players. But not only do you have to have them, they have to play. They have to produce. So what Popovich draws up, if you watch especially their offense, and you see that rotation and you see them move and you see them constantly in motion and the passing is crisp and it's perfect, you teach that, but then you have to have the players that execute it. I don't think Miami's been executing the way we expected them to. You got LeBron James, who's unequivocally the best player in the league. And then Wade, who I would still start almost any team with. I think he's a fabulous player. And Bosch, who can still play. But they're not executing, whether it's Spoelstra drawing something up or not. They're just not executing the way they could. And you got to give some credit to San Antonio, probably a lot of credit to San Antonio's defense for that. I just think, you know, Popovich is a brilliant guy. He knows how to coach. You have to have the players in your system that can execute when you set up a strategy, and that's what they've done, and Miami has not executed.
Steve, you know, I'm a big Dwayne Wade fan. I always have been. He's not always been healthy during his career.
Yeah.
Is he hurt? I mean, he looks hurt to me.
He looks like he's just maybe not quite there or not quite with it, and maybe that whether that translates to being a step slow because of some injury, I don't know. But I said a minute ago that I would still start almost any team. Here's what I love about that guy. Forget about the offense. He's a very good offensive player. He can get his own shot. He's got a beautiful soft touch around the rim. Seems like every time he throws something up in the lane, it just kind of bounces in. What I like is his defense. He is just this side of being a dirty player. And when I say just this side of being a dirty player, I mean he does everything that you can do defensively that's legal and sometimes pushing the envelope to make him a great player defensively. And that means he's slapping at you, he gets away with it, and great players do. Especially when you're in a crowded situation, like if you're in the lane and you go in there and arms start flying and guys start hitting each other. You saw what he did to Paul George, which was interesting when he created that concussion situation. He hit him in the head with the knee, which I thought was not intentional. And then as he dragged the leg over him and got him with the foot, I thought that was kind of questionable. And even before that happened, he grabbed Paul by the arm, which they didn't call. So he's just a scrappy guy defensively. He's a lot like, or I should say that John Wall and even Bradley Beal to this point are a lot like him in the sense that when you retreat on defense, if somebody's in a fast break situation, those guys are going back there to block the shot. And Wade is probably the best in the league as a guard at blocking those kinds of shots. So I think he's a really great player, Bruce, but I think you're right. There's just something not right about him at this point right now.
Now everybody's talking about the future of the Heat as if, I mean, I don't think this series is over, but for some reason nobody wants to really talk about the series right now, and everyone wants to talk about Carmelo Anthony and the possibility of him coming to South Beach, which to me is an extreme stretch. I know that James and Bosch and Wade all have buyout clauses that they could all buy out at the end of the year and technically make some sort of room for Carmelo Anthony, but that would also mean Anthony has to make a cut too. And Wade's due, what, $42 million or something like that in the next couple of years. But so do you see this as a real possibility, or is this just the heater down and we need something to talk about?
I think it's interesting, Roy, in that some of it may or may not depend on how this series turns out. And if, in fact, San Antonio wins tonight and they take the series, it may deter them from being as hot on Carmelo Anthony as they would had they won and next year they were going for four in a row. Mm-hmm. Or it may have the opposite effect. It may say, look, we need to get something here to get another victory, to get a third championship next season. I don't understand the dynamic enough about making millions and millions of dollars like these guys do. I know it's all relative, but it's different when you make that much money. I don't know that dynamic of saying, well, I'm going to give up $6 million this year so I can have a chance to win. My thought process, like I think a lot of normal citizens that don't make that kind of money, is, if I've already made $100 million or more, what do I care about? $6 million is not going to matter. And truth be told, it's not. Mm-hmm. It is $6 million. Don't get me wrong, and they realize that. But I think it's in relativity. When you make that much money, or you have made that much money, you will sacrifice to go to a situation where you can be a champion. I just don't like the idea of manufacturing these championship teams. When the players seem to get together to do it. I hated it. I had no problem with LeBron leaving Cleveland.
Right.
He was there 6-7 years, and he had had enough, and he was ready to leave. What I had a problem with was that he and Wade and Bosch got together and said, hey, let's create a dynasty together. And I just don't like the way that happens. But look, maybe they're not going to win this year, and so it doesn't work every year.
No, it won't. And we're talking to Steve Buckhantz, one of the voices of the Washington Wizards. Steve, we got about 5 minutes left. Do you think this is good for the NBA if they do lose? I mean, because, you know, I really – listen, when they went there and they had the big press conference, I was in my car, and I was driving listening to it. I turned it off. It just kind of made me sick to my stomach, and I don't know why, but it just – you know – if you're going to fix a team to win a championship, doesn't that take a little bit of the competitive edge out of the whole league?
Yeah, well, I said it did, and like I just said, I don't like having to do that. Having said that, you know, I actually like the Heat. I like to watch them. I mean, how can you not like to watch the best player in the game? I mean, he's fabulous, and I love Wade's game, and heck, I even like watching, you know, the Birdman. I mean, I think they're an interesting team. Here's what I've always, and I try to say this delicately, but here's what I've always sort of rubbed me the wrong way. Miami is not a great sports town.
Agreed.
It never has been. Now, you may get some folks from Miami that argue that, but the fact of the matter is, if LeBron is not playing on that team, or Shaquille O'Neal is not playing on that team, they will regularly put 7,000 to 8,000 people in that building to watch a basketball game. Now, that's by NBA standards, that's you know, pathetic. Mm. And
not good.
It's not just basketball. You can look at the baseball team.
No, absolutely, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, that stadium's empty.
Yep.
The Dolphins don't sell out.
Nope.
And even back in the Dan Marino years, when they were in the playoffs, Burger King, which is headquartered in Miami, would have to buy up the rest of the tickets in that stadium so that those games would not be blacked out. They didn't sell out when they were in the playoffs. And you can go to – now, I don't know about hockey. I really don't. I have no idea what the hockey does. But I just don't think it's never been a great sports town like a Chicago or a Philadelphia or a Boston.
Right.
Or some of these great sports towns. I don't mention Washington only because we're a great Redskin town and we've become a great hockey town and we're becoming a great basketball town in time. And I think the Nats are showing that we, you know, we're there. We just have to give teams
absolutely
a consistent winner.
Absolutely.
But they never have been. And that, Bruce, that's what's rubbed me the wrong way. I just, I don't care whether it's Miami or some other town that's a kind of a bandwagon type town. I think there are other teams that deserve 2 and 3 championships in a row a lot more than that city does. Now, look, LeBron attracts a tremendous amount of people, and they've got a nice following now, and maybe they'll continue, but that's not been the history there.
All right, hey, Steve, listen, we're gonna have to run, but I wanted to wish you a happy Father's Day because you
Thank you, and you too. It's stepfather for me, and yep. I'm very happy about that. I got 2 great stepkids, Jake and Olivia, and happy Father's Day to you and to my dad, who Friday turned 87 years old.
Wow.
And we'll celebrate Father's Day and his birthday this evening. And to all the dads out there, I never really knew what that was like, but I'm finding out now, and it's a great thing.
As always, Steve, it's a pleasure, and it's our pleasure. Steve Buckhantz. Steve, you're the best, buddy.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you, Roy.
All right, buddy. We'll be back in a minute on News Talk 1230 WFAS.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation by calling 240-317-7294 or by emailing us at brucehallsports@gmail.com. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I really enjoyed talking to Steve Buckhantz. I've known Steve since he got out of high school. He's a little bit younger than me, and I got a guy on the phone right now who I enjoyed watching play baseball when he was in high school, Mike Wallace, former Madison Warhawk, then played Major League Baseball for 5 or 6 years, and now he's like one of the best people covering the Nats in the National League East that I know. Wally, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Bruce, how's it going?
We're doing okay. You know, I enjoyed watching your show yesterday, Nats Talk. You say the name of the network because I get the two of them mixed up because they're all the same. Are you on Masson?
We are on Masson, the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network. We're on every Saturday from 10 to 12. Have a ball doing it, and get to see a lot of baseball, get to see some guys I haven't seen in a long time. So I have thoroughly enjoyed the 4 years that we've done the show.
Now, listen, we're going to talk about what a lot of our people like to hear about, which is both Eastern Divisions, the National and the American League East. You're pretty much an expert on a couple of teams, and you're an expert on all of them anyway, because I know you. You read everything. You talk about everything. There's nothing better than sitting in the Vienna Inn with you and talking baseball for an hour or two. Let's talk a little bit about the Yankees. Do they have any chance at all this year in doing anything? I just happen to think they're a little – I hate to say this because I'm old, but they're too old, they're too banged up, and there's a couple of teams, maybe 3 teams, that I feel like have a better chance of winning the East than the Yankees. What do you think about the team you used to play for?
Well, I've got to tell you, it sort of reminds me of what's going on with the top guys in the National League East. I think any of them can win. Nobody's going to run away with that. Although I got to say, Toronto's one of the surprise of the season up to this point, you know, with 40 wins and being on top by 3 games at this point. But I think the Yankees got a shot. I think Baltimore's got a shot. And I don't think Boston's out of it.
Now, I got to agree with you. And Toronto is a surprise. I mean, Melky Cabrera, who arguably had a phenomenal first half with San Francisco in 2012 and was a big reason that they won the National League pennant and the World Series that year, even though he left, you know, he did his 50 games afterward, and I'm pretty sure they released him or they just didn't bring him back that year. He's had a great season so far, and it seems like their pitching staff has been remarkable. I mean, you know, they got guys that are doing a good job starting that haven't, you know, a lot of people don't even know.
Well, you know, they're like a year late because they were supposed to contend for the American League East last year after making all the big deals to get Dickey, to get Burley, to get Reyes. So The fact that they didn't contend last year means, you know, makes it quite a surprise this year, although, you know, they've still got most of the guys that that they had last year. But they still got the two big thumpers. You know, I like their bullpen a little bit. They're a good team. They'll be in it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let me ask you a question, Wally, and you'll have a good answer for this, because having been on the road when you were a player and having been on the road when you've been around baseball and various different jobs that you've had over the past few years, how does a team like Toronto, New York, and Baltimore have a better road record than home record?
I have no idea. That's always strange, because usually the teams that are successful are very comfortable in their home yard. So that's interesting that, you know, they have better records on the road than they do at home. But that could change before the end of the season's over, too. We still got a little less than 100 games, so... And like I said, most teams that are successful play well at home.
Now, you know, your show is about the Washington Nationals. And by, you know, being a Nats expert, that makes you an Atlanta, Miami, New York, and Philly expert in my mind. Which of those teams, let's just say for now that Washington probably will hang around, you know, most of the year and be there at the end. Who do you see being with them at the end, or do you not see the Nats being there at the end?
I see the Nats being there at the end, and I see Atlanta being there at the end. I think it's going to be a matter of whether it's a two-team race or a three-team race. I'm not sure that Miami's starting pitching can continue to perform without Jose Fernandez in their rotation, which is what keeps them competitive. So I think that because Washington's starting rotation is really coming around, I think Atlanta is still trying to get all their guys well in their starting rotation. But I just think because of the lack of experience and not many of them having cranked out 200-plus innings in the course of a championship season, I'm not sure that Miami's rotation can stay the course.
We're talking to Mike Wallace, who is with Masson Sports in Washington. He's got a show called Nats Talk. Mike, you know, the Atlanta has always been, they always seem to be in it, and generally speaking, they're always in it for the same reason that the San Francisco Giants are usually always in it to a certain degree, although you could argue about that last year, and you could also argue about it this year if they're going to even have the staying power to do it. But Atlanta, I mean, they got B.J. Upton, who they paid $15 million a year for 5 years, who's playing center field, that's hitting 200 pretty regular.
Right.
His brother, Justin, both of these kids, of course, Virginia boys from Chesapeake, Great Bridge area. You know, Justin, obviously the better hitter, not the defensive player his brother is, but he's having hamstring and quad problems on a regular basis. You know, they paid Freddie Freeman a bunch of money, and he's obviously worth it. He's a good ball player. Their third baseman looks like he gained 30 pounds of muscle. I'll just leave it at that. I don't know. I just saw him the other day. I can't believe how big he's gotten.
Chris Johnson?
Yeah. Have you seen him lately? He's a monster.
Well, his batting average has gone down about 65 points from last year.
Well, then maybe that extra weight isn't doing him all the good that his trainer told him it would, is it?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, last year I think he came in second in the National League in batting average at about 335, somewhere in that area. And now he's, you know, way below 300. So he's taken a little bit of a dip. But I never thought that Chris Johnson, because he came over in the trade they made with Atlanta, where in Arizona,
right,
made deal where Martin Prado who was a pretty good third baseman and I thought a pretty good hitter, went to Arizona, and Chris Johnson ends up as the third baseman for Atlanta. So I'm not sure that the guy that came in second in the National League batting race is the Chris Johnson who you'll see every season. I think he's like a 280 guy, plays a pretty good third base, but like I said, that was obviously a career year for him last year.
Yeah, I don't know how many bombs he hit last year, but it might not have been, you know, that many. I know he hit for average. I know he scored some runs. I know he drove in some runs. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, maybe they did want him to hit more, so, he bulked up.
That seems like what he did. All right, before the season started, Wally, one of the things that we heard out of New York was Sandy Alderson kind of running his mouth about how, you know, there was a chance that this Mets team could win 90 games. Obviously, it doesn't look like they're going to win 90 games. They also have to figure out if they're going to go to the bathroom or get off the toilet. That's a nice way of putting that. By the way, happy Father's Day, buddy, to you.
Same to you.
That's great. Hey, listen, I just didn't want to forget to wish you a happy Father's Day.
The Mets tanking is what.
Yeah, well, the Mets tanking got me thinking about more important things than the freaking Mets. but let me ask you this. Now, you know, they've got Harvey with Tommy John surgery, and he's saying he's coming back. Wheeler doesn't look like the guy that they traded for. Wheeler might end up, you know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see him go on the DL because he's had a couple, three really bad outings recently. You know what
yeah.
I mean? They don't seem to have, you know, I think the, what's his name? The right-hander that was a solid guy for them, and I forget his name right now, but he is hurt. He's going to be on the DL, it looks like.
Dylan G?
Yeah, Dylan G is probably a guy that might get moved, too. I see him being traded, maybe, before the trade deadline. You know, the Mets, to me, look like they're in constant transition. Are they ever going to get it together, or do they not have the money or aren't willing to spend the money to get a competitive team in the National League East?
Well, if you look at what they've got in their rotation, it's sort of, you know, it's veterans put together with a couple really good young arms. If G's hurt, that hurts them because he can pitch a little bit. Nice can pitch a little bit. But Bartolo Colon and Matsuzaka, they're temporary fixes.
Right.
You know, Colon's got a 2-year contract, but, you know, they're hoping that their kids develop. Hopefully their pitching in their minor league system develops, you know, in not too long, not too distant future. You know, Harvey will be back. They make a mistake if they rush Harvey back because I don't think the Mets are going to be really competitive or in the middle of this National League East race by the time that Harvey's ready to come back. So if that's true, I'd let him stay on the DL until next season.
You ought to be the GM of the daggone New York Mets, Wally. You know that? Because I don't even think that Sandy knows what he's going to do yet, and that scares me about Harvey. And it was bad enough Harvey was throwing 160, 170 pitches when he was at UNC a game. He finally tears his arm up, and now he wants to come back early. You know, I don't see it happening either. Hey, can I get you to hold on and do another segment with us? Because what we're going to do is we're going to get you involved in the picks that me and Roy do the last segment. Is that cool?
Sure.
All right, buddy. For the first time in generations, the dream of home ownership is being threatened. Realtors, members of the National Association of Realtors, are here to represent you and protect home ownership. We'll be back with Mike Wallace of Masson Sports and Roy and Matt and me. Happy Father's Day. See you in a minute.
We're back on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Join the conversation anytime by calling 240-317-7294. Now, here's your hosts, Bruce Hall and Roy G.
I'm back with Mike Wallace of Masson Sports. Nats talk, but he's basically baseball talk. Shoot, Wally, you should have 3 or 4 shows as far as I'm concerned. And by the way, Wally, this is all I'm going to say about soccer right now. I'm going to do it so I don't forget. Go USA tomorrow against Ghana. I think you're going to win.
Yes,
so anyway, we're done with all of that. That's how much soccer we do on our show, Wally, right there. And that's plenty. It's World Cup stuff, whatever that means. But anyway, listen, we're gonna pick some games, Mike. You ready?
Go ahead.
You're going to like this. And you know, really, today, I don't really have, there's only one game I really like out of all the games today, and that's really odd for me. Normally, I pick three or four. Roy likes to pick a lot of them because he has all of them. Yeah, he's got a blog and he plays them all. He's one of those gamblers that likes to lose all the juice.
I like to lose all my money.
So anyway, Minnesota Detroit. You got Ricky Nolasco going up against Porcello. Porcello's actually looked pretty good, although his last three starts not so good. I'm going to pass on the game because I just don't like this game. How about you, Wally? You like it?
No, I don't like Porcello. In fact, we talked about Porcello when they made the Pfister deal. I like Pfister. I don't like Porcello. I wouldn't have made the deal if Porcello was the guy we'd have gotten. And Nolasco has been very questionable in Minnesota.
Yeah. Hey, so, well, how about you, Roy?
I like that game.
I'll pass with you guys, but if I had to pick one, I'd take Detroit.
All right, Toronto's at Baltimore. You got Tillman -115. They're 9-5 in games he starts. It's Toronto. It's a big game for both teams. You know, if I had to pick it, I'd take Tillman. Tillman's looked okay, only Hap this year versus the Orioles. 6 innings, didn't give up an earned run. I'm gonna pass on it, though. How about you, Wally?
Well, it depends on how many I've got to pick, but I don't like that because there's another game I like better.
I'll take Toronto, simply because Baltimore, I don't live there anymore and I can pick against them.
For anybody that's listening to this show right now, Roy just picked Toronto, take Baltimore. In the third game, I'm passing on the game. You got Kluber, who's looked great for Cleveland, against Boston in Fenway Park. Workman. You know, Workman's pitched pretty well, actually. He's a righty. He's like a fifth, sixth kind of rotation guy. He's there probably not permanently. I got to pass on this game, too. Wally, you like this game?
No.
I hear you. How about you, Roy?
No, I don't like either of these
guys. All right, Kansas City's at the Chicago White Sox. I love Shields. He's 10-4 that when he pitches this year. He's 7-3, his record. Last versus the opponent, 2.02 ERA in 40 innings. You know what? Kansas City's on fire right now. I don't know if it's bringing in the guy from Milwaukee. They brought in a new hitting coach, their fifth hitting coach in a year, Wally.
Bill Swain.
Yeah, he's a good kid. I remember when he was a rookie with Milwaukee. He was a good ball player.
Well, they made a change last year when they brought George Brett out of the executive offices and made him the hitting coach for a short period of time.
Well, you know, if they don't straighten the ship there in Kansas City, I hate to say it, but a guy that we all know that, you know, spent some time at George Mason University may be out of a job. What do you think?
Well, I think they're going to be competitive. I think that they got over the 500 hump last year, and I think that Central is going to be a dogfight. And I like Ned Yost, and I like Dale Swain, so I think that and Detroit's got a rookie manager, so I think Kansas City's got a chance to win that thing this year.
Well, they're only like a game and a half back right now. So, yeah, I mean, they've really turned it around in the last 2 weeks. So I'm going to take Shields here on the road. It's the White Sox. They're not that good.
Yeah, no, I'm going with you on that one. I'll take Shields.
How about you, Roy Boy?
Yeah, Shields.
you got David Price, who's been struggling, to say the least. Although against this team, the Houston Astros, he hasn't struggled. It's in Houston. He's got Peacock, who used to be a Nats guy before he got traded, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yay,
I guess,
out of their system.
I guess he went via Oakland and then ended up in Houston.
Yes.
I got a pass on this game. I don't like Price lately. And you know what? Tampa Bay isn't hitting the ball. They remind me of my Cal Ripken collegiate team. Sorry, guys, but we're not hitting the ball or scoring either. So if you
don't like this game either.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on it. How about you, Roy?
I'll take Tampa Bay just if I have to play.
Just because it's a superstar pitching. You got Nuno against Chavez, the Yankees in Oakland. I always love Oakland on Sunday. I always take them. I'm going to take Chavez at home. Oakland has the best team in the American League, in my opinion. And, you know, they got beat, I think, last night. I think the Yankees beat them. So I'm going to take Oakland to come back on Sunday like they always do. They're 9-4 when Chavez pitches, and they're also -170, so Vegas thinks they're going to win too. What about you, Wally?
I'm passing on this. even though the Yankees are hot, I don't like the pitching matchup for the Yankees.
No, I hear you. How about you, Roy?
If I have to take one, I'll take Oakland. I'll ride with you.
All right, here's my game. I'm taking Seattle. Iwakuma, who has looked good since he came off the DL, he's solid. Seattle, he's at home. Roy said something about Angela Rippon.
Angela Rippon. Seattle's at home. Angela Rippon's in town. You know,
gotta
win.
Got to do it. I'm going to take Seattle here. I like them against Texas. I said it a while back. Texas is terrible. They're not going anywhere. I got a feeling they're going to move some guys around at the end of the season. I don't see them firing anybody until the end of the season. But Texas, I think, is done. How about you, Wally?
Well, I'm going to pass on this game, but I think that you might be right about Texas because, you know, Nolan Ryan's gone.
Yep.
So there could be some changes in the front office and possibly the dugout.
You know, everybody talks about how great John Daniels is. I don't see it. I'm sorry. He knows the game. Knowing the game and doing the right thing all the time are two different things. So, I don't know. We're in the National League now. We got Kennedy for San Diego against Matuzaka for the Mets. I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of money talked about and dealt with here. Matuzaka's 3-0. I'd take the Mets. San Diego's terrible. Mm-hmm. They're just having a hard time scoring runs, and the Mets need to win badly. I'm going to take the Mets. I wasn't going to, but I'm going to talk myself into it. How about you, Wally?
No, I'm not going. I'm not touching this one.
All right. How about you?
I'll take the Mets. Yeah.
All right. Good. You got Pittsburgh at Miami. Alvarez at home. He's -140. Miami needs to win, but Pittsburgh does too. I'm going to pass on this game. This is a good game right here. This is probably going to go into extra innings anyway. They always seem to. Alvarez has done real well lately, though. In 19 in a third innings, he's got a 0.47 ERA in Miami. You know what, Wally? I just talked myself into taking Miami because the number isn't that bad. How about you?
Yeah, if I had to, I'd take Alvarez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worley just got called up, yeah. And I'm not a big Worley fan.
Yeah, I'm not a big Philly fan either. No offense, because you used to play for him. You got the Chicago Cubs at Philly. You got Burnett going for Philly. They got a shot there. They got Wood pitching for the Cubs. I'm going to pass because Philly just doesn't have the firepower either. And the Cubs seem to play a little bit better on the road than they do at home.
I wouldn't touch this game.
Yeah, it's ugly, isn't it, for a Sunday game? What about you, Roy?
I'll take the Cubs simply because A.J. Burnett is terrible and Philly is the worst city in America. That's why.
That's nice. That's
just a couple small reasons.
Wally, when I see you next time, I'll tell you my Philadelphia story. You can write a chapter on it in your book.
So, all right.
Cincinnati's in Milwaukee. You got Mike Leake, who I happen to love. I had dinner with him when he was at Arizona State because he played on the same travel team in San Diego as Brett Bochy did and as Steven Strasburg. He also would have been drafted in the first round as a shortstop if he hadn't have made it as a pitcher. Estrada has looked decent, but not great. I'm going to pass on the game because Mikey looks like he might be sliding. This has been the best year Leake's had so far. But I'm going to leave it alone because Cincinnati hasn't started hitting again. And Milwaukee has my buddy John Nairn as the hitting coach. So I'm going to pass.
Yeah, I don't like that game either.
What about you, Roy?
Nope.
All right, good. Washington, here we go, Wally. You can stay out of this because, of course, we're only talking about, you know, doing this not professionally for money but for points or in a pool, right? Washington Fister, who's looked really good lately, is going up against Garcia. Pretty sure Garcia just came back off the DL not long ago. He's a lefty that's always given us trouble. Although this team, This Washington team might not have as much trouble with Garcia because they seem to have a lot of right-handed bats compared to usual. I mean, they don't have Harper. I'm not real sure here. I'm going to pass on the game. I want Washington to win, but St. Louis needs to win worse. What do you think?
I like Pfister against Garcia because mm-hmm. this year's Washington Nationals hit left-handers pretty well. In years past, Garcia has been a problem. But you know what? The whole St. Louis Cardinals pitching staff, in fact, the last 2 days included, have been a problem for the Nationals. But I like Pfister the way he's throwing, and I think the Nationals are going to score some runs off Garcia today.
Yeah, when he starts, they're 6-1, and in his last three starts, he's 3-0 with a 1.80 ERA.
He's pitching great. If anything, if there's any downside, he's due for a beating.
Yeah, probably. That's probably why I'm going to leave it alone. I like Pfister. He's fun to watch. You know, he just seems like... To me, he looks like a high school / college guy. He just has a good time out there.
He doesn't walk people. He's the epitome of Ray Miller's guy. He works fast, he changes speeds, and he takes out. So I've been really impressed with Pfister. I've always liked him going back to his Seattle days. So I'm not surprised that Pfister's pitching as well mm-hmm. as he is.
Well, in the next game, Colorado's at San Francisco. You got Ricky Nicasio against one of my favorite guys, Madison Bumgarner, who's still only 24 years old. He's my son's age. Doesn't turn 25 till September. Bum has had a great year. Nicasio, not so great, but they've won two games. Sergio Romo's blown two saves the last two nights. He's not coming in. He shouldn't have come in the first night, in my opinion. They should have just left Machi in there, Machi. But I'm going to take Bum here. I very rarely take San Francisco, but I love him here because they need the W. And, I think he's going to get the win. What do you think?
I'm with you on that one. I like Bumgarner against Nicasio.
Hey, you like those lefties all the time.
I'm taking the Rockies because the Giants have screwed me the last two times I've played.
Well, you know what? That might be a good play. Everybody was trying to, give San Francisco, even though it's early June, like the pennant, and it's a long road. It's a marathon. Last but not least, Arroyo's at Beckett. I'm going to pass because both of those guys are on my son's team, his fantasy team. So I don't want to get in the middle of that. Although Bronson Arroyo is starting to look better. Beckett, of course, threw the no-hitter. What do you think, Wally?
I'm liking Beckett in L.A. today.
No, I hear you. They need the win, too. What do you think, Roy?
Yeah, I got Dodgers.
Hey, listen, Mike Wallace, Masson Sports, Nats Talk. Mike, thanks so much
thanks,
for coming
Mike.
On. We'll have to do this more often. You're fun to talk about. It's fun to talk about
talk
the games. We'll see you later. See you next week on Bruce Hall's Second Opinion. Take it easy.